This means that Donald Trump will be the 45th president of the United States.
This is your life now. This is our election now. This is us. This is our country. It's real.
Hi, and welcome back to the 45th. Rabia here, and I'm here with my co-host, colleague, Susan Simpson. Hey, Susan, how are you doing?
Hey, Rabia. I'm doing good. I've got a new personal best report in.
Oh, what is that?
Yeah, I demolished an entire bag of Costco pretzels in under 2 weeks. It's like a week and a half. It was a solid performance.
You know, Susan, I think they're meant for like an entire family to last like a month. But
I did too.
Look, I'm not judging. My husband's baking spree continues. In the last couple of weeks, we've had donuts. We've had like the cinnamon monkey bread stuff. And just 2 days ago, I casually shared like a picture of Maryland state cake. I don't know if you know what it is, but we have an official state cake.
Is it made out of like crabs?
It's not made out of crabs. It's like 10 layers. It's called a Smith Island cake, and just look it up because it looks amazing. And I've never had one, even though I lived in Maryland for a while. I just sent him a link, and then I think I took a nap. When I woke up, he had like 8 cake pans out, and he's like, I'm making this cake. And then for the next 4 hours, he made a Smith Island cake. And so,
Are they good cakes?
You know what? For somebody who doesn't bake, I mean, he's been doing pretty good. He's like,
itself. Is a Smith cake a good cake?
It's gotta be. I mean, I haven't had like one from an actual bakery, but you can order them online too. How can you go wrong with tons of thin layers of cake? And that just means more frosting.
Right. There's
so much more frosting that way. But he also tried to make Japanese cheesecake, but that turned more into like a flan. But anyway, the point is we're all just getting fatter and fatter in Ramadan.
Well, this morning I came downstairs and there was this jar of, I don't even know. And my husband's like, it's a sourdough starter. I'm like, well, you're those people now, of course.
Yeah, we're all turning into like great pioneers here. I'll be canning before you know it. But in the meantime, I can still find no toilet paper. So that's where we're at.
Yikes.
All right. So let's see. Today is, it's May 6th. And we have surpassed, I think, projections that we thought we were going to hit like out in August. We're standing at 72,000 deaths, close to 72,000 deaths in the United States, over 1.2 million confirmed cases. This is according to the Johns Hopkins coronavirus tracker website. And I think there are some new projections that came out either yesterday or the day before that says that we are not even getting close to, as a nation, flattening. Now, New York has seen some flattening. Other areas have, but other areas are on the rise. So we're looking at maybe hitting around 3,000 deaths a day in the United States by early June.
We have no idea what we're facing at this point. Like, let's be real. It's going to probably be bad, but maybe not. That's my expert analysis, because we don't know shit.
Hasn't the probably been bad ship sailed?
Well, no, because we just don't know. There's so much we don't know about this virus. There's so much that we are not able to accurately predict.
Right.
For instance, Japan. They did well at first somehow, but then they had a sudden spike and it was picking up. And their best models, their experts, projected that they too would start facing, like, you know, the creep up the exponential curve. And this was mid-late April, and it never materialized. It just didn't happen. And no one knows why.
Well, how about, are they mitigating as a nation better than we are?
No. I mean, they're doing less mitigation than we are.
Is that right?
Yeah. They never even went full lockdown the way we have.
Okay, so their businesses stayed open and all that stuff. No mandatory masks and things like that.
The mask is more like, that's more universal. Definitely is a part of it for sure.
Okay.
But in terms of like actual lockdowns, like we're doing it, no, they're much more open relatively, and they're not having this spike even though they started to creep up on numbers. And I think we're seeing that across the world, and it's just
baffling.
Whatever is going on, we do not have a full way of capturing that in our models. There's some factor, there's something going on beyond what we're able to predict right now. And it could be pure chance. It could literally be that occasionally you have a super spreader who sneezes at the right time,
right,
and 1,000 people get sick. And if it happens, you're screwed. If it doesn't, you're fine. It's probably not that simple, but there's something that we cannot accurately predict about how this works.
This is being seen in Japan, but not in other countries, or we're seeing something similar?
Oh, it is too. Like, take Indonesia. Indonesia is doing mysteriously well to an absurd degree. Like Bali.
I'll be honest. Okay, I don't know about Japan, but Indonesia, I don't know about reporting how accurate.
Okay, so that's very true. That's a good point. But okay. There's one thing that you can't hide. People dying. If they were having an epidemic that caused the kind of deaths we see in New York, they couldn't hide it. It just you couldn't be done.
Yeah, probably not. Although I will say this. I think we are at the verge of this, of different governors trying to figure out how to hide stuff. And people challenging, and we've seen this like in the last few weeks where, you know, you've got like news commentators saying, hey, did that person really die of COVID? Why are we calling everything COVID and this reclassifying stuff? We know in Florida, there have been issues with getting the health department to report accurately. So, I mean, there might be ways, but...
But the raw death total, like at the very least, if you're not having an increase in deaths overall, it's hard to see where you're... I mean, maybe there is an increase in deaths from COVID, but also because people are staying home, there's less deaths overall. I don't know.
Right.
But from all signs, Bali has done absurdly well to a degree that can't be explained by what we know.
That's and a just look at highly California. Populated area, too.
Yeah, look at California and Washington versus New York. They both had their initial cases, we thought, at the same time. And their trajectories just were totally different. Now, could it be because of governance? Probably. Some degree, maybe. But... I think we can confidently say that.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, there's so many things to account for, but I also think you have maybe a higher density in certain places of people with more, like, underlying issues, right? I mean, like, in certain cities, big cities especially, like pollution, asthma, all kinds of existing conditions that people more likely suffer from. Also, if there's more poverty, you're going to have people with worse health.
And that would explain fatality rates, maybe, but it's harder to see how that explains just pure infection rates.
Yeah,
I know there have been suggestions like there's different strains or something, or that there's a more infectious strain going around. From everything I've seen, that's not supported by the evidence. The idea that this is like we've now diverged into like less and more infectious COVID, that does not seem to be true. There are some reports to that effect, but they all seem to be misinterpretations of underlying reports from scientists.
Well, there seemed to be a lot of confusion about this virus in so many ways. Number one, like how it's spreading, whether it's reinfecting people, how long even the contagious stages and even symptoms, I mean, are all over the place, right? People are dying from strokes related to COVID. They're dying for, I read an article about a doctor saying he'd never seen a person's heart literally explode before, and that happened in a fairly young COVID patient.
The first reported death, actually.
Oh, is that what that?
Yeah.
So true, now we've got like COVID toes.
It's not funny, but it's really funny.
I mean, it's like, is it fungus or is it COVID toes? So it seems like the virus acts differently in just every single person in a way.
At the same time, though, there definitely is like a constellation of symptoms that the doctors in these hotspots know by heart. Like they can they can tell now. And by themselves, those symptoms may not be so odd. Like in a normal time, someone came with those symptoms, it wouldn't be like, what the hell is a strange disease? But there's a very common pattern they can now see. But then again, there's all this stuff we don't know that's happening, like with children having this inflammatory response that was reported in several New York patients.
So a week ago, and I wasn't here a week ago because of this, and some of the listeners might know and others might not. My father had a minor stroke, and he and I had, we'd already seen reports where there were patients who were having strokes related to COVID. And so he was in Baltimore at the time. He was taken to the hospital. I got the call. I got to the hospital. Of course, they didn't let me in. So I didn't get to see him when he went in. And my greatest terror was like, I'm never going to see my father again. But also I was like, I don't know what it's related to. It turned out it was related to his ridiculously high blood pressure, but they kept him there for a couple of days. He's thankfully recovered, whatever it was, it kind of reversed itself, but they never actually tested him for COVID. And my brother-in-law is a doctor in Baltimore, and he told us last week that sometime in March, he had had a really, really bad cough for weeks, like a weird, weird cough he'd never had before. So the hospital told him stay home for 2 weeks and then come back to work, but he wasn't tested for COVID in that time. He recovered, he's fine now, but it just makes you wonder... even with the reported cases, are we not seeing real numbers here? Because they're just not testing. So I'm not a gamer. I don't play games, basically. But I have one single game on my phone, Susan. And that's helping me get through this quarantine. It's called Best Fiends. I've been playing it for about 6 months now.
Best Fiends is, you know, I'm not going to say much is perfect for the pandemic, but Best Fiends is perfect for the pandemic because guess what? You got more time in your hands now. Also, even outside of the pandemic, it's great for commuting or for just killing time in between meetings because it's a great casual game that anyone can play.
So Best Fiends is basically a kind of puzzle game. It's got all these cute little characters. A lot of them are bugs. The antagonists are slugs. It's a very popular game. It's got 100 million downloads. It is 5-star rated. It is free to download. And by the way, I play it. My 11-year-old plays it. I mean, it's kind of family friendly, so it's great.
And you don't need internet to play, so you don't need to worry about Wi-Fi access or using cell data. Best Fiends updates the game monthly with new levels and events, so it never gets old. And while doing the puzzles, you can collect characters that you need to use strategically throughout the game as you progress.
And what I love about Best Fiends is that it's really not meant for gamers. Susan, I think you are a gamer from what I mean,
it works for gamers too.
It works for gamers too. But it's meant for, it's a casual game. So you can be somebody like me who just kind of pops in and out, plays little as much as you like, however much time you have.
Or you can play in between Halo rounds, whatever works for you.
Whatever works for you, that's right. So check out Best Fiends today in your app store. Again, that's Best Fiends, like friends, but without the R. And when you play, definitely let us know how it's going on Twitter and on social media.
Well, we now know that not only were the first deaths in February in the U.S., like early February, we also know now that in France, they had COVID patients in late December.
Whoa, what?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I had missed that. Is that right?
I think it's, I mean, it does seem like this whole thing has started before we thought it did, and that it has a slower ramp up, maybe. The crisis inflection points, the point where everything starts going to hell, takes a long time to build from what we've seen. And by long time, I mean like weeks and to months, not like forever. But again, like it can be there undetected in the community for many, many weeks on end before someone starts to notice what's going on.
And what if it's like one of those things where it can be dormant for a while because you have it. It's dormant and then something activates it after like 3 or 4 weeks. Like, I feel like there's so much unknown about this virus. And yet here we are, where 31 states, CNN's reporting, are about to, quote, reopen in different ways. Every state has its own little thing. And the weirdest thing is not just states, but like, you know, Ocean City, Maryland, huge tourist attraction, has officially reopened, I think, this week or something, or this weekend it's reopening, or today or something. However, the mayor of Ocean City, Maryland said, we are reopening the beaches, but only in accordance with the governor's strict stay-at-home requirements. What? How does that operate? Basically, they're saying you're on your own.
Though, on the beaches. The beaches, I think, should be open. As long as people are being mindful of distancing practices, beaches should be open. Outdoors should be open. Parks should be open. The crazy crowded parks shouldn't be happening. But I think trying to close down the beaches and the parks is detrimental.
I agree, that's
what we're trying to do. Yeah,
but my understanding is that when he says the boardwalk's going to be open, he means like the shops and Jesus. The restaurant. I don't know exactly.
Which wouldn't apply to the U.S. so much, but one possibility that I think has been proposed, I don't know how much there is yet to show any proof of this, but one possibility is that we're dealing with cross protection issues to explain the different infection rates. We know for some viruses it's fairly common for infections by another similar virus to infer not immunity, but like resistance to another different type of virus that's related to the one they had before, which, who knows, could possibly go some way to explain why we're seeing different rates of infection, because some locations already have a herd immunity to a local virus outbreak that is conferring some protection resistance that lowers the transmission rate there, maybe.
I mean, it's all maybe, and that's the problem. Well,
which is why I go back to what I was saying before, in that we don't actually know. Like, it is possible. It is, in fact, possible that we can just open everything up and it'll go fine. Is it likely? I don't think so. Is it worth risking? Absolutely not, hands down. But is it possible? Yeah. There is a universe where that, like, we could just open everything and it'd be fine.
I feel it's, like, such an unlikely universe only because we're looking at what's happening, for example, at populations that are captive. And I understand, like, prison populations, senior homes. But also, in the last week, it's been reported, you know, three of the major processing meat processing plants have closed 15 of their plants. Tyson, JBS, and Smithfield, because 4,900 workers combined in those three plants, according to the CDC, have tested positive for COVID. Those are people going to work together.
Yeah.
Those are people who were told, apparently, that, you know, everything's going to be fine. The frigid temperatures in the processing plants will keep them safe. And by the way, even without a pandemic, these people usually wear a lot of protective gear in these plants. Like, they usually have a lot of stuff covered, hands covered, face covered. And yet, that is an incredible, incredible outbreak.
We do know in some settings, there's no mystery. COVID just spreads like wildfire.
Right.
Yeah.
But what about these plants? These are working. I mean, it's like anybody working anywhere, right? I mean, like, they're... I would almost say that these workers might be more protected than many other workers in other kinds of industries working together.
Maybe there's something about it. Like, the cold and the... I mean, obviously, they're close together inside.
Yeah.
So that alone makes them at higher risk. And even with protective gear, are they have enough... Like, are they actually protected from virus spread? Right. Like, I don't know what kind of gear they're wearing.
But. I will also say this, just kind of noting the industry. My father worked for the U.S. Department of Agriculture for years, and many, many workers in these plants are often migrant workers or immigrant workers, and many of them live together in, like, the same kind of communities, and many of them, they may or may not be documented. They traveled together, like, in buses and vans and stuff like that. And so it could be stuff that's happening outside of work to all their contacts there that is causing that rate of infection. All right. Do we want to talk about the new whistleblower report complaint?
Yeah, I mean,
the new one.
The problem is that we're now at this strange and possibly at some point inevitable mixture of forces where we have Trump triumphant after his impeachment, where he realized he can just say fuck democracy and everything works out fine to him, where Republicans have stopped protesting his abuses of power and are willing to just, like, shrug and say, what are we going to do about it? Combined with the pandemic, which means people don't have the attention or ability to give the sustained effort necessary to force Trump to do anything at this point, where you can have a whistleblower like Rick Bright, the former top vaccine scientist and the pandemic response in the United States government, come out as a whistleblower, alleging not just stuff about the pandemic, but stuff that happened before all this that's naked corruption. And it's a big deal-ish, sort of, but, like, he's not even scheduled to testify on the Hill yet, as far as I've seen. And it's kind of like, well, what do you expect? Which is horrific, because, like, this is the kind of stuff that should be, like, a, you know, administration-defining moment. And it's like, of course that happened.
So Dr. Bright headed up BARDA, which was a little agency within Health and Human Services. It was created in 2006. It was in response to 9/11. And basically...
Terrible acronym. They should have worked harder on that.
BARDA. the Biomedical Advanced Research Development Authority, BARDA. Yeah, so basically the whole purpose of it was that it was going to be like a government agency that would help partner with, private entities to help the stockpile, the federal government stockpile, things needed to combat biological, chemical attacks, pandemic threats, things like that. They work with a lot of pharmaceutical companies and other private entities and biotech firms and stuff like that. Now, he's been there since, he has been there about 4 years, and you're right. So his whistleblower complaint has issues back to, like, at least 2017, I believe. And basically, what are kind of the allegations? Can you give us, like, an overview of what the major allegations are in this complaint?
So the procurement is a huge one. How the Trump administration goes about getting supplies from the private market. And for instance, one of Bright's allegations has to do with... Robert Kadlec, who was at HHS, and he was Bright's boss at the time. And according to Bright, Kadlec and others were pressuring him to have government contracts to acquire these drugs and medical products for the nation's stockpile from people and companies who were favored by the Trump administration, which is illegal and not a thing you can do. Government contracting is designed to be done in a way that does not allow this kind of favoritism to happen. Of course, it still can. The people involved aren't doing it right, which is what Bright is saying happened here, which again would be a huge scandal. Now we're like, oh, the Trump administration just pressured people in the government to buy from companies they like. I mean, of course they're doing that, which is horrific. I feel that way too sometimes. Like, it's like, yeah, we know what's happening, so it's harder to feel that outrage that we should have felt and would have felt in any other administration. But one of the bigger, I mean, the more publicized parts of the complaint has to do with, of course, hydroxychloroquine, which is the miracle drug that Trump was promoting for no reason other than he thought looked good once, and he said in a news conference from thereafter he was committed to it. And the Trump administration was trying to acquire vast amounts of this drug that's untested and unproven in any way to treat people in New Jersey and New York. And Bright was objecting to that as being totally bonkers. And in the end, guess what? Turns out hydroxychloroquine does not seem to be a good treatment at all for
And Bright had leaked that to the media, like, went back, I think, early March or at some point.
Which is not illegal at all. Like, if it's not... If leaking things that are not classified in public interest is not considered... Like, it's not a crime. It's not illegal at all. It can get you fired, sure, but it's also not in any way a crime.
Well, he was fired. He was fired in April.
Well, he was transferred.
Transferred. NIH.
But demoted.
Yeah. And another part of the complaint, he also says that he had encountered opposition from his superiors, including HHS Secretary Alex Azar, when he was trying as early as January for, to try to prepare for this pandemic, to develop drugs and vaccines. And he was getting pushback from his seniors.
Yes.
Which really goes back to the whole issue of, like, when did the administration know and when did they start taking it seriously? Which maybe it's not even now, but...
Yeah. Well, Trump's whole response has been to downplay it, hope for the best, and when the best doesn't happen, just to move on. Like, again and again, he's, like, holding out for that 10% chance of a miracle. And if it does happen, great. Everything's fine. And it's... You're on course. You haven't changed at all. You're not going to lose anything. If everything works out fine, then you're in the best position you possibly could be in. And every time we're losing that dice roll.
Yeah. Another part of the strategy also, I think, is that I feel like you can find clips of him saying every single possible thing he could say in response to this any given time. So he kind of covers all his bases. He could be like, oh, no, I did say it's going to be a pandemic. Oh, no, but I didn't say it was going to be that serious. I'm like, he has made every remark possible related to this virus.
When he can always just say, too, oh, I was sarcastic when I said that. I was kidding. I was joking.
Oh, my God. Oh, yeah. The bleach thing or the disinfectant injecting thing.
Or the Nobel Prize. For the journalist.
Oh, God. That was awful. Well, Trump got out and about yesterday. He made a visit to Honeywell and basically held a campaign event there. But
with campaign music at his presidential event, which, you know, again, in normal times, that'd be a giant scandal because that's a violation of what you're allowed to do when you're acting as the president. You can't campaign. You can't use campaign music. You can't make it a campaign rally. No one cares anymore because everyone knows that they can't stop Trump from doing it and Trump's going to do it anyway.
Yeah. Like, people are just like, they just let go of certain issues. It's like, what are you going to do? What are you going
to
do?
Which, again, like, there's no way to not do that to some degree, which Trump knows and taking advantage of. But, like, we're in a pandemic. We don't have time to, you know, care about Trump's minor corruption.
Well, okay. So, at this event, he once again did not wear a mask, but he wore visors because that's, for some reason, what?
In case there was an eclipse he's going to stare at again? I don't know.
I don't know. He was given some kind of weird plaque with a mask hanging inside of it. I guess Honeywell is making these masks. It's like a new site they just put up just to make the masks. He had the same kind of thank you, dear leader, speeches given and bullshit. And then, but again, no mask. We've seen in the last couple of weeks, Vice President Pence also touring various facilities, mask, no mask. Where was he where he went to the Mayo Clinic, no mask. Everybody around him is wearing a mask. Yeah. Everybody. And he's not wearing a mask.
And then he's Pence afterwards like, oh, I didn't know I had to wear a mask. Oh, please. Really? No one told you this facility is mask only and everyone around you wearing a mask, but you're not?
I think it's interesting that... Oh, so I don't think they've been doing the daily briefings anymore, right? Like
they have not been.
Okay. But up until the last time they were, and
the last time they were was when he said the bleach thing, and that was
they're like, that's enough. Then they put Kaylee up there, right? A few days after that.
Yeah. Oh,
But look, none of the reporters wearing masks in there, and I thought that was problematic that they won't do that. Apparently, at one of the briefing, or it's one of these things, there was one female reporter who was wearing a mask, and Trump asked her to lower it so he could see her face, and then continue with the questioning, but.
Because Trump wants the visibility of normalcy. He wants it to look like you can go out and do things mostly normal and not panic people so that they'll theoretically go out and act like normal and help his economy again.
And yet, he continues to block. Like you mentioned that there is like no scheduling of Dr. Rick Bright, the new whistleblower, to testify at any time. But for as the House is trying to figure out what has been happening behind closed doors, especially with Kushner, Trump has directed the entire coronavirus task force not to talk to House oversight, to any of the House committees at all.
Yes, because he'll only testify before friendly people now, and that's normal.
And it's not.
He's basically, I say basically, he's literally made this explicit that why he's doing this, he only wants to testify places where his supporters control the levers of government, which, I mean, on one hand, sure, like, oh, of course Trump would want that. On the other hand, that's totally opposed to, like, the whole idea of democracy. Mm-hmm. And we've now, well, we know Trump is corrupt and going to do things like this that are anti-democratic, and what you going to do about it? It's just how it is. He is making no pretense of what his goals are, so there's no scandal over it. It's like when he was talking about D.C. in an interview recently. He was asked if D.C. would get statehood. He said no, because that would help Democrats. It would hurt Republicans. Which is obviously the reason they've imposed D.C. statehood from
he just says
from
it out loud.
Time. But there's always been a push to, like, pretend there's reasons Republicans don't want D.C. statehood. That has nothing to do with, you know, partisan politics, when it's all about that. And then Trump now is just like, ah, fuck it. It's because we'll never let D.C. be a state because we want Republicans to do better. Yeah. I mean, which is saying that you don't believe in democracy because you're trying to stop people from voting if they're not going to support you, a certain party. So basically now the whole idea of, you know, one person, one vote does not apply to Republicans. They don't want that. They're not looking for it. They're trying to stop it.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. I mean, that's what all the, you know, voting suppression's always been about and the racial stuff. Yeah. And speaking of the coronavirus task force, there have been some conflicting reports that yesterday that it's gonna wind down or it's gonna start moving into considering, like, they haven't been meeting every day anymore or not meeting for as long, and now they're gonna start transition to how to open up the country. Like, that's, they're not worried about the virus anymore. I don't know how they're not worried about the virus anymore.
It's not that they're not worried, but what's the point of the task force? Like, the task force is just a pretty name. Like, oh, the task force is on it. They're taking care of it. Pence is fixing all this. Then they have a briefing where Trump gets to have his rally, and they call it a day. So it's,
I mean, that was, I guess, kind of the purpose of it. And maybe since Trump is like, well, I told people to put bleach in themselves, and I can't have my rally anymore, so what's the point of this whole circus?
Yeah. So then Pence is like, yeah, we're going to wind it down by Labor Day, which is insane. And then, of course, at the same time, Fauci was on the phone with a reporter. He's like, I never heard any of this. We're not shutting down. That's not true. And Pence in the other room saying, yes, it's going to shut down Memorial Day. And then less than 24 hours later, like not even 20, like we're talking like 18 hours later of that.
Right.
Trump is asked about it. And he says, oh, I thought we could wind it down sooner, but I had no idea how popular the task force was until actually yesterday when I started talking about winding it down. So they're now going to keep it for the indefinite future. Like, basically, Trump, it never occurred to him that people like the perception that the federal government's doing anything at all. Like, they find that, they think it's a good idea to have some kind of evidence that Trump's doing shit. But Trump, also, it's like, it was pointless anyway, so why does it matter?
Right. I mean, well, the thing is, what's alarming here, I mean, so many things alarming, but what's really alarming me is the fact that what's important to him is not whether or not there's a task force that's doing anything.
But how popular,
like, whether it has a purpose. It's just about how popular it is. But, you know, somebody who we haven't seen do much lately is Kushner, who was working behind the scenes of the task force. But there have been a flurry of stories about Kushner and his role in all of this in the last 3 or 4 days. I don't know if you've noticed.
He's the guy always behind the scenes with his great, grand, like, capitalistic ideas of how to use the power of business to make government better, when in reality it's much like inept volunteers who are trying to get, you know, favoritism from the government, who are doing favors for Kushner in a very inefficient and ineffective way.
Well, according to the Daily Beast, Kushner's just pretty much been absent, and he's not really working on coronavirus-related operations, because he was kind of in charge of, I mean, I don't know, he was helping to coordinate, like, contacting private entities and basically getting PPE and pirating all the shit from the states. Now apparently he's been assigned a new mission. It's called Operation Warp Speed.
Yes.
Yeah. Which is an effort to have a vaccine. What's that?
Oh my God. Again, terrible names these government activities are getting into. Why are they putting Kushner in charge of that? Like, literally, why is he doing anything at all? But why Kushner for this?
Well, I mean, so this is supposed to be an effort to have a vaccine developed by the end of the year. And again, it's the same theory. They operate under the same theory when it comes to Kushner. He has a great Rolodex, that he just knows a lot of people in all kinds of industries, and he can make phone calls and make shit happen. And so this whole entire operation is, again, that Kushner will be able to use his relationships in private sector to speed up, like, the lengthy process of developing a vaccine, which is so incredibly unnecessary because guess what? There are companies and agencies that have been doing this shit forever. And that's what they do. And everybody's trying to do this as quickly as possible. I don't know what Kushner could add to this. But what Kushner could do is actually harm the effort. Apparently, there was a complaint filed just last month within the House Oversight Committee from somebody who was a volunteer working with Kushner. Okay, first of all, why are there volunteers? But he was a volunteer working with Kushner to try to secure PPE during the time when Kushner was doing that shit. And this complaint says that this Kushner's little team, he had tapped a bunch, like maybe a dozen or so volunteers in different industries, but they actually had become like problem. So it says that none of the volunteers had relationships with manufacturers. They didn't understand any of the requirements of the FDA. And they basically ended up kind of working against sometimes each other, but also against the mandate.
I mean, let's be real. They're probably Kushner's drinking buddies from college. That's who this group ugly is.
That could be it. Well, the House is like, okay, well, we want to take a look into this. We want to see especially what Kushner was involved in when it comes to FEMA, because apparently FEMA teams were the ones who arrived in many instances to intercept PPE ordered by states. And they wanted an answer by April 15th. Of course, nobody responded. So that's that. Speaking of which, I got to say, I saw a report over the weekend, I think this past weekend, about Hogan, who is the governor here in Maryland. I thought it was pretty gangster. I don't know if you've seen this, that he gave an interview in which he said that he's secured all this PPE. He's got it in an armory and it's being guarded by like state, local officers and National Guard to make sure that the feds don't pilfer it. Isn't that insane?
It probably wasn't there at all. It was probably a misdirection. He's probably got it like in a silo somewhere. He's like, do not try and get the PPE in this armory that's guarded by all of our.
It's like in a local Krispy Kreme or something.
Yeah.
Oh my God. But I thought that was pretty like, I mean, that's a bold move to actually say it out loud like that, because that's an in your face Trump, and he doesn't like him. But
the story we still like don't know enough about, given how widespread it seems. Like, it seems to be a real thing. Like this whole like piracy by feds of like state supplies, we don't know yet. Like, there still hasn't been like a comprehensive reporting what the hell's going on, and that seems to be because in part no one actually knows what the hell's going on, and that this is not like one organized effort, it's just chaos. So trying to do like a you know, investigative report breaking down and determining the source of all this is not coming together, because there is no plan here, there is no organized piracy, it's just a free-for-all.
So this, Trump has given a couple of interviews this week, and frankly, I've ignored them.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah, I did see little clips of him sitting at the Lincoln Memorial at night. I don't know what the hell was happening. I think it was a Fox interview. I don't know why he got to do that interview there, but he
got special permission, because you usually can't do events there inside the actual monument. But yeah. Trump wanted to have the, you know, dramatic background. So have you seen the Biden ad about it?
No, I actually haven't.
Oh, well, you know what? Let's play that now.
I am greeted with a hostile press, the likes of which no president has ever seen. The closest would be that gentleman right up there. They always said Lincoln. Nobody got treated worse than Lincoln. I believe I am treated worse. I am treated worse.
I am treated worse.
So that's not the first time he's said that. I feel like, does he not know what happened to Lincoln? Does he have no idea?
He does, but he literally thinks he's treated worse than Lincoln, despite the fact that Lincoln was literally shot and killed. He still thinks he's got a worse deal of it. So here, in his mind, people like Lincoln. He's jealous of Lincoln. So Lincoln got a good deal. Things went great for Lincoln. He got great press. He still gets great press. That's what Trump thinks is a good deal. So Lincoln did fantastic. Like, why would Lincoln possibly complain? Trump's the one who's actually has something to complain about.
I see what you're saying. But Trump still has a whole, I mean, look, we've got protests around the country against like the governors who are closing, you know, they're basically MAGA protests. Heavily armed MAGA people are showing up, and his polling is still holding up, right?
It's polling's where it always is, because it'll never move ever, because unfortunately we have a portion of the country that is fixed and immovable in their support for a fascist. Mm-hmm. It's what it comes down to.
Yeah. And then he gave another interview, I think it was last night, to ABC?
Yes.
So what happened
It was a typical, like, as if we're still in 2015 kind of interview, where the reporter is questioning a politician in calm, respectful tones, and acting as if Trump is at all bound by any kind of decorum or fact-based approach to the world, which he is absolutely not. So, of course, the reporter there, you have the striking juxtaposition of the reporter asking calm, mature, important questions, and then Trump just like raging randomly. But there's no follow-up. There's no like attempt to like actually, like, when Trump says random shit, like, oh, it's because Obama, like, the tests were bad because Obama administration made bad tests and I had to fix them.
Right.
And there's no pushback when, like, he's repeated this lie 100 times. That's probably why there's no pushback, because it sounds like boring to push back the same bullshit lie. But Trump keeps repeating it because eventually it's the new reality. Like with his stupid tariffs and where he's like, China's paying us all this money. No, American importers are paying the American government that money. And no one even cares to correct it because it's been said 1,000 times, so who even cares anymore? This is what's happening with the stupid thing about Obama messing up the test. Right. And again, the reporter doesn't say anything about that. But here's what happened when Trump was asked about the stockpiles that were empty. He complains about, why didn't he fix that?
Many people have heard you say that along the way and have wondered, though, you know, you're 3 years into your first term.
Yeah.
You're now applying for the job again. What did you do when you became president to restock those cupboards that you say were bare?
Well, I'll be honest, I have a lot of things going on. We had a lot of people that refused to allow the country to be successful. They wasted a lot of time on Russia, Russia, Russia. That turned out to be a total hoax. Then they did Ukraine, Ukraine, and that was a total hoax. Then they impeached the president of the United States for absolutely no reason, and we even had 197-0 vote by the Republicans.
Let me ask you about something Governor Cuomo said today.
Look, you know, Robin, I've been there too. I get it. But, hey, nah, we've all been there. Sometimes you just got a lot going on. You forget to, you know, miss an email, forget to restock our pandemic supplies. It happens.
It happens. And other times you actually actively do everything you can to ignore a threat that people keep telling you about and have teams in place for. But, well, here's the thing, though. On the other hand, I can actually see how this is going to play out. But there's still value to a reporter. Every time, like, the very, very few times that a reporter will follow up, will press back, it becomes, like, viral news. Because it so rarely happens. But all he does is deflect anyways. If the reporter said, well, why would, there was no coronavirus when Obama was president. Why would he have tested for it? I'm like, something as simple as that, just a fact. Trump would just completely, he would completely pivot to another subject altogether. You know he would. He would never respond. But I guess for the value of actually putting it to him.
But there's no value in it. Like, the point of these, the goal or the aim of this whole concept of, like, interviewing politicians is to get information. That's reported. The whole point of this is to get information to people. With Trump, you're never getting information. You're just getting sound bites and propaganda. So that's all this has turned into. Like, you cannot use this model designing information when that's never going to happen.
I think what's my theory here, because even though I didn't really follow the interviews, I know that nothing really big came out of them because nothing has, I haven't seen any reporting around it. So I'm assuming he had nothing new or interesting to say. But he's just getting restless. He doesn't have his rallies. The briefings are not happening right now. And so he's like, all right, I'm going to go to Alabama to check out Honeywell, and then I'm going to give interviews. Like, he's hungry. He needs to be fed. His ego needs to be fed.
He needs to have the economy, the best economy in the world that he's ever made. He'll do it again, too. And he's banking on the hope and the small chance that everything will be fine. And that actually, if he just lets it rip like he plans, we can go back to normal. And if he's wrong, he'll do what he does every time, which is just fall back to a new position. But if he's right, he'll reap all the benefits.
I see a bullet point on our little draft script today that says super villain shit. And, you know, there's so much that could apply to Susan. But one particular story that you mentioned here is about the flipping wall, because he's still going on about the wall. But let's talk about this. And then there's another supervillain story that I thought was really interesting, too, related to the wall. But
yeah, so Trump he's done, like, what, 170 miles of new wall now. He wants to have enough in place by 2020 election where he can say, I built the wall for real, not just like one measly stretch. But after being convinced last year, we talked out of his plan to paint the wall black. He has now redecided he wants that damn wall black.
We're calling it a wall. It's a series of steel beams, but yes.
Yes, but he wants them black. He wants them black and hot and fearsome looking. Like, literally, he wants them to look, like, imposing and to be so hot to the touch it, like, burns people's hands if they touch it.
His theory is that the steel that these beams are made of will somehow be made hotter.
Oh, it's true. It will. Like, there are paints you can use for that that will cause them to be hotter. But he also thinks it looks more imposing and scary, which, again, it's just straight-up supervillain shit. But also, like, there's 170-whatever miles of wall up. When you want to paint a wall, you do it before you put it up. It's way more expensive and tricky to do it after the fact. And besides all that, however they do it, it costs money. The cheapest possible option is at least $500 million, and it could be up to $6 billion, depending on how they do it.
They could save money if they had people on the other side of the wall paint it for them.
But here's the thing. All this money was never even, like, allocated by Congress in the first place. Like, right. Under the normal system of our government, this should never be done because the money has to come from Congress, and it did not. But Trump's emergency powers meant that he is now just, whatever, I want to paint the wall black. I want my imposing villain wall to be as fearsome as possible. That's an emergency. I'm going to find funding from somewhere else in the government. Just take it for this.
Adding to the supervillain shit related to this wall is a story I saw this morning in which the Department of the U.S. government, Trump's administration, is suing, in order to build the wall, a children's orphanage to take their land so they can build the wall through their land. I mean, can you?
That's some real supervillain shit right there.
It is. It is. A flippin' orphanage. I mean, it's a children's home care center.
Taking an orphanage to get a wall that you can paint black so it looks scarier. Yeah.
Yeah.
He's going to end up with some lair somewhere, like, you know, a cave with, like, tricked out spines everywhere. That's where we're heading.
Probably. Okay. What else we got for this week? Things are getting a little tense with China. I've seen more reports.
Are they
where,
now?
Well, it seems like Trump, it seems like, well, okay, look, I didn't even realize this until recently, but just last month, the Missouri Attorney General actually sued the Chinese government. And then we've got some legislation proposed to allow American citizens to individually sue the Chinese government. And there's been conversations inside the administration to strip China of sovereign immunity to allow people to sue them for deaths and damages from coronavirus.
I don't think it'll ever happen, because even now, when Trump is the rhetoric is indeed a little bit more anti-China than it has been. Even now, Trump won't actually attack China outright. He'll never attack President Xi. He'll never say a bad word about him ever. He'll just be like, someone could have stopped this and they chose not to. He won't even name China half the time. He's just like, someone should have stopped this sooner and they never did. Like, he basically is his current.
But he has said publicly a couple times they need to be held accountable.
Yeah.
They need to be made paid for this.
But he's never been specific, and he's been remarkably, like, restrained in how he attacks them. But who he's not been restrained with is the World Health Organization, who he happily attacks. It's their fault for not stopping China. They're the ones responsible. He attacks them more than he attacks China.
Right, but he also says that China, basically, I mean, the World Health Organization is controlled by China. But in effect, what
he's blaming the World Health Organization for that, not China.
Right. But all this talk, though, I mean, like, if you got states suing China and then legislation allowing Americans, maybe it won't go anywhere because of the sovereign immunity stuff. But Trump doesn't have to say anything if other people start, like, jumping on this bandwagon. And it's a great diversion tactic to be able to be like, look, there's all these lawsuits against China because it was China and not our lack of response and preparedness that got us to, what are the projections now? Are we back at 100,000
something? We were always at 100. We never went under it. That was just Trump talking. We were never under 100. And 100 is like the best possible case scenario. And we're at 70 what now? So we're not going to, we're going to sail right through 100.
I feel like just a few weeks ago, it was like the projection was 60. Like literally just a few weeks
no,
ago.
No. That was just Trump talking. That was never a projection on any model. Always just Trump. Just saying bullshit.
Okay. Well, anything else newsworthy you want to talk about?
It's a little footnote. It was a headline story when this happened first time around, when Trump tried to appoint Congressman Ratcliffe to head DNI. And the Republican senators were like, oh, hell no. This is our line. Like, actually, we still exist. And actually, we will object sometimes. And we object now to Ratcliffe because he is in no way qualified for this job. He's just a Trump toady. They blocked it. It didn't happen. So instead, Trump appointed his batshit crazy German ambassador, Grenell, to be the DNI acting head. And suddenly, at round two, Trump is now nominating Ratcliffe once again. And they're like, eh, whatever, it's fine. We can deal with this.
Better than Grenell?
I don't know if it's because they're like making a count, like they're looking at this thing, you know what? Grenell's such a disaster that even Ratcliffe would be better. If it's like actually a calculation, or if they just totally given up and don't give a shit anymore. I kind of lean towards the latter.
They're giving up on a lot of stuff, aren't they?
They're just giving up. They're just trying to ride this out.
Everything. Just ride it out. Let me ask you this. How do you think this is going to play out for Trump in the election? I mean, that's the bottom line for everybody kind of focused like down the road in many ways. Of course, you've got the fear on the pandemic. But in terms of like who can actually make a difference, stop this train wreck, I mean, it comes down to November. And I haven't been following polling lately, but the last time I saw something, it looked like Biden was going to be doing better.
Trump has always been down to everyone all the time. He's still down to Biden. It hasn't changed. The thing is, his structural advantage means that doesn't necessarily mean he'll lose. Like, nothing's even changed there at this point. There's some interesting polling out of Texas, which seems like more likely now to be the swing state than Wisconsin. But overall, he's behind in polling. He has always been behind in polling. That hasn't really changed that much. As for how coronavirus affects it, I mean, that depends on how the coronavirus pandemic plays out. Like, what Trump is hoping for and may get is that this is actually something that will go away with, maybe not in April like he thought originally, but it'll go away in July. And maybe it'll hold off and not start up again in earnest till after the election. That's his dream scenario, and that's what he's gunning for right now. That's his hope. He's playing towards that outcome. The other option is that we just do what we did with guns and say, yeah, Americans going to die all over the place all the time. We'll just deal with it. We hit a plateau. We don't have a wave. We just have a straight up plateau cruising in for 3,000 deaths a day for God knows how long.
Right.
And Americans are so psychologically numb to this. They're like, yeah, whatever. That had to happen. That's what it was. So be it. You know, no one could have stopped it. No one could do anything about it. So whatever. Don't blame Trump.
He did play the song as he's touring the Honeywell factory yesterday.
How live, can you be this bad at politics? Okay.
Live and let die. You know, I don't know if he's bad at politics or he's like, F you, I can do anything and say anything. And I don't care if you all die, which is pretty much what he said.
So here's where I think Trump, his nightmare scenario is. I think even worse than the plateau, which we seem to be heading towards, is a second wave.
Yeah.
I think for Trump, it's actually preferable just to have Americans just keep on dying steadily and be numb to it by the time election comes out. Alternatively, we do decrease. We do have a decline. Maybe even like a great decline. Maybe we can go like really, really low. And then suddenly, early October, everything explodes once again, but worse than before. That's his nightmare scenario and a very possible one based on how we know pandemics work.
Yeah. All right. Okay. Well, I guess that's it for us this week. And anything else, Susan?
Nope. I'm going to go back to ordering some more pretzels.
Okay. I have a question. Mm-hmm. Are they like straight pretzels, the skinny ones?
No, they're flat. They're flat ones. The thing is, we legit didn't even order them. They showed up in accident our order. I'm like, well, I guess they're here now. I think it was a scam. I think I was just baited with these pretzels. Now I'm going to buy them forever. They knew
it. The universe responded to the call of your heart. You didn't even know you needed it. Pretzel thins are delicious.
They're amazing.
All right. All right, guys. Thanks for tuning in. And stay home, stay safe, and we'll be back in 7 days.
See y'all then.
A big thanks to all our listeners for tuning in to the 45th podcast week after week. And if you'd like to give us further support, you can do that by becoming a patron at patreon.com/45thpod. By doing so, you can become a supporter and patron for as little as $5 a month. And to do so, again, go to patreon.com/45thpod. A shout out and thank you to our sponsors. They make this program possible. And I urge our listeners to please check out our sponsors and use their products. And thank you to them for helping us produce week after week. Thank you to our audio producer, Hannah McCarthy, our executive producer, Meethal Thelhan. And you can find us on social media. We are on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. Our handle is @45thpod. Our website is www.45thpod.com. Thanks again for tuning in. See you next week.